If all that exists, exists within the mind of God, that is, for in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Acts 17:28 NIV. And we are in fact created in the image of God with the potential to exist in the likeness of God, then it is perhaps best to envision each individual soul as having a vertical slice of the whole. Which means that in the same way that within the mind of God exists the seven divisions or kingdoms that comprise white light, and that paradoxically, on one level each of these kingdoms appear to function independent of the other six, then these same divided kingdoms not only exist within the higher reality of the soul, but as an embryonic image of the soul. See man as an embryonic soul image. Mankind is imbued with these same incremental divisions within himself. And in the same way that as a segment of the whole, each soul holographically inherits a vertical slice as an image of the soul, each person inherits a vertical slice of their higher soul self. Which means that in the same way that the great multitude exists within the mind of God, and the multitude of soul-generated personalities exist within the higher reality of the individual soul, this means that this same division exists with each of us. Not only across the spectrum of a fragmented human personality, but also a fragmented lower nature that is comprised of the lower three earthly kingdoms. And so long as we remain fragmented and divided, it will be impossible for us to achieve the next stage of soul birth where we become at one with our higher soul self that is the true being of light that we are. Returning to the above statements, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, and why the Gospel of Thomas statement, recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you, and the statement of the modern physicist who portrays the images we see as the facade of a blemish or shadow image of the outer darkness or shadow image in Plato's cave of illusions. Because we dwell in a divided three-dimensional realm, what we are perceiving with our very limited earthbound and generated senses are aspects of mind that are presented to us in allegorical imagery. Which means that only when we begin to understand what we see with the allegorical meaning of the form of the imagery, only then can we begin to recognize what is in our sight. And only then can we begin to perceptively comprehend the higher 12-dimensional source that causes what the physicist portrays as a blemish. But what does this mean? In his 1951 textbook on quantum theory, Baum offered some interesting speculations on the analogies between quantum processes and thought processes, thus carrying further the celebrated statement made by the astronomer James Jeans 2 decades earlier. Today, there is a wide measure of agreement that the stream of knowledge is heading towards a non-mechanical reality. The universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a great machine. And the statement by astronomer Arthur Eddington, "The stuff of the universe is mind stuff." Max Planck, who is considered the founder of quantum theory, stated, "As a man who has devoted his whole life to the most clear-headed science, to the study of matter, I can tell you as a result of my research about atoms this much, there is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter." More recently, cyberneticist David Foster described an intelligent universe whose apparent concreteness is generated by cosmic data from an unknowable, organized source. The reality of the holographic theory says that our brains mathematically construct hard reality by interpreting frequencies from a dimension transcending time and space. The brain is a hologram, interpreting a holographic universe. If you understand what is being said, then you can begin to understand why mystics who have walked the spiritual path in search of gnosis and the divine manna of the kingdom of God have traditionally warned others that what they see with their physical eyes, that is, the objects that appear to their organic senses and mind as being concrete and solid matter, is merely an illusion. And if we ask the question, what does this mean? What we are confronted with is a reality that few biblical skeptics are even prepared to embrace. That is, that the allegorical nature of the scriptures is merely an extension of man's own consciousness, mind, and being. Because we dwell in a three-dimensional world, What we are seeing is images of mind impressed into the allegorical images of nature. As modern science has already proven, what man sees as concrete matter is in reality a spectrum of frequencies of thought that the physical mind interprets as being concrete, and in reality, the images that we physically see are very much aspects of mind impressed into allegorical forms and symbols of nature that reveal to the seeker/disciple the forces and laws operating within their own mind and being. See the illusion of the forms of matter. The evolving soul, in our true form that is, the true being that we are a being of light. While Creator God brought forth all souls in the beginning, and these souls were themselves sparks of the divine that is, quoting from the allegorical fall of man, in the beginning all souls existed as sparks of the divine. In what I portray as the realm of souls, each individual soul would be perceived as a weak flickering light like a distant star. Quoting the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia under the heading of Souls, Transmigration of, the doctrine of transmigration of souls, which was especially accepted by the Karaites, appears often in Kabbalah. It is found in organized form in the Zohar. It is further developed in the teachings of Isaac Luria, 1534-1572, and in Hasidism it becomes a universal belief. According to these teachings, all human souls have a common origin in the spiritual unity of the primordial man, sparks of which form the individual souls. The sin of Adam brought higher and lower souls into confusion. As a result, every soul has to pass through a series of incarnations. The soul itself has no sex, which is determined by the body and may vary from incarnation to incarnation. Thus, the pre-existent soul of man, which is portrayed as sparks of which form the individual souls, are in fact the beings of light encountered by some people in a near-death experience, and it is this being of light that is each person's true form and self. Moreover, in our natural state, we are a being of light, and our body vessel which we inhabit in this world is merely an allegorical projection of mind and spirit into the image of the body. That the journey of the soul over the course of many lifetimes was an integral part of the teachings of Jesus in the way, and was removed by the Roman emperors who ruled over the doctrines of the church. See the religion of Roman emperors. Is further demonstrated conclusively in the 10 reasons why the church rejects the teaching on the pre-existent soul. In the Zohar it is written that all souls are subject to the trials of transmigration, and men do not know the designs of the Most High with regard to them. The souls must re-enter the absolute substance whence they have emerged. But to accomplish this end they must develop all the perfections, the germ of which is planted in them. And if they have not fulfilled this condition during one life, they must commence another, a third, and so forth, until they have acquired the condition which fits them for reunion with God. In order to begin to understand soul evolution, we must focus on the above words. The souls must re-enter the absolute substance whence they have emerged. But to accomplish this end, they must develop all the perfections, the germ of which is planted in them, until they have acquired the condition which fits them for reunion with God, which is expressed in the Sermon on the Mount in the words of Jesus when he stated, "You, therefore, must be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect," Matt 5:48. But what constitutes perfection? And how is this condition brought about in the journey of the soul? The soul of every person began their existence in the Alpha of creation as sparks of the divine mind of Creator God, as stated in the Zohar. But to even begin to contemplate the higher reality of Creator God and our relationship thereof, we must understand the teaching in one of the most ignored gospel statements in the New Testament, where mankind is portrayed not only as the offspring of God, but as dwelling within the mind of God that is, "For in him we live and move and have our being." As some of your own poets have said, "We are his offspring," Acts 17:28 NIV. Put this together with a statement by James Jeans, See Science, Religion, and the Field/Mind, that the universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a great machine. Or the words of Arthur Eddington, "The stuff of the universe is mind stuff," and you have portrayed a higher reality that few people are even prepared to contemplate, much less understand with a sufficient degree to even form a realistic opinion. Further, if you attempted to convey this reality to the common man of the first century, They would very much reject what you are saying as foolishness, much like the vast majority of mankind today. Those who are able to enter what I call the realm of souls, that is, a higher reality that must be entered by going within self upon entering this sacred realm where everyone exists in their pure state as a being of light. One is immediately struck by the fact that most souls appear as a weak flicking light like a distant star. The more advanced the soul, the bigger and bright the light. In the case of the few who can be categorized as spiritually advanced, such as the soul who lived as the historical man Jesus, is a soul of great intellectual and knowing light, depth, and expanse. And where all souls, including the soul of Jesus, all began in the Alpha as sparks of the divine mind, the laws have been put into place. See the laws as a living biofeedback organism, whereby every soul will in the Omega of creation evolve to a great being of light. Which provokes the questions, what process causes the light of the soul to evolve and grow from a mere spark into a great light? And if it can be stated that as presented in the Gospel of Thomas that, but if you will not know yourselves, you dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty, how much more in the case of those who fail to understand the process that evolves the light of the soul? When the first century Elder Ignatius wrote to the Christian congregation of believers that, might I not write to you things more full of mystery? But I fear to do so, lest I should inflict injury on you who are babes. Pardon me in this respect, lest, as not being able to receive their weighty import, yea, should be strangled by them. He said this because if he was to begin to even convey the truth and reality of man's higher soul and spiritual nature and the kingdom, these Christians would very quickly dismiss him as a crazy lunatic and would no longer listen to a thing that he says. Therefore, Ignatius, as with all the biblical authors, see mystery, understood that the mind of the believer must be matured. The dormant spheres of mind that do not correspond to this physical world must become activated and developed in order for the believer to begin to perceive and grasp his own higher soul and spiritual reality. And this expansion of organic human conscious beyond normal physical limits is what is portrayed in the process. Whom will he teach knowledge? And whom will he make to understand the message? Those just weaned from milk? Those just drawn from the breasts? For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Isa 28, 9 to 10 NKJ. In the same way that an infant grows into a child, an adult one step at a time, so too does the process of mental expansion take place line upon line. Perhaps the key to bridging the visionary perception of the Gnostic mystic who authored the scriptures, see an inconvenient truth, with that of modern cyberneticist David Foster, who described an intelligent universe whose apparent concreteness is generated by cosmic data from an unknowable, organized source, is in beginning to understand why we see allegorical images. The reality of the holographic theory says that our brains mathematically construct hard reality by interpreting frequencies from a dimension transcending time and space. The brain is a hologram, interpreting a holographic universe. And only then can we begin to grasp why Jesus stated that organic man dwells in the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness, and why Plato portrayed man as dwelling in a type of cave of illusion, see illusions, illusions that are shadow images of an unseen reality. And the answer is provided in the above words that our brains mathematically construct hard reality by interpreting frequencies from a dimension transcending time and space, explaining that our brain is a hologram, interpreting a holographic universe. What this means is that we dwell within the great mind of Creator God as sparks of the divine. Each of our souls are as a single neuron in the mind of God, and based upon the frequencies of thought that we perceive and interact with our physical senses, our brains interpret these frequencies in the allegorical forms that we perceive as being concrete matter. Each aspect of thought is represented by a universal symbol that our brains interpret in the form that we observe when we look out at the world. But if we pose the question, is what we see concrete matter? And why are these forms in the outer world said to be an illusion? See the outer darkness. What we are in fact seeing is animated thought-generated symbols, that is, thoughts that our brains, organic consciousness, interpret in the context of an allegorical symbol that we perceive as the shapes and forms that our physical consciousness interprets in the appearance and meaning that we see it as. Thus, the words of Carl Pribram in the February 1979 Psychology Today interview, where it is stated that it isn't that the world of appearances is wrong, it isn't that there aren't objects out there at one level of reality. It's that if you penetrate through and look at the universe with a holographic system, you arrive at a different reality, one that can explain things that have hitherto remained scientifically inexplicable, paranormal phenomena synchronicities, the apparently meaningful coincidence of events. In the words that it isn't that the world of appearances is wrong, what is being conveyed is that what you see or think you see in the outer world of appearances is thought portrayed in an allegorical form that permits the people stuck in the limitations of this realm to interact with a higher reality of mind that is beyond their conception and even beyond their wildest imaginations. Why is this interaction necessary? In the beginning, that is, the Alpha of creation, no experiential knowledge existed, and thus, this period in our soul's existence can very much be portrayed as the Alpha of absolute ignorance. And where in Jewish mysticism the soul is portrayed as sparks of the divine, and these sparks are in fact white light, it is important to recognize that what we see as white light is actually comprised by what we call the seven colors of the rainbow, and it is these seven primary colors that make up and manifest white light, which in sound, the seven colors correspond to the seven notes of the octave. Why is this important? Because of the holographic nature of creation, where the pattern of the macrocosm is replicated into each of the parts of the microcosm that make it up, that is, expressed in Genesis as, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them." Gen 1:27 KJV. Holographically, what this means is that the pattern of the whole is replicated into each of the lesser parts, often expressed in the term the divine pattern of creation. With the control of these major and lesser realities portrayed as the law, the natural laws of creation expressed in the deist term the laws of nature and nature's God, see. But what this means is that all of creation is controlled by natural law. Natural law controls all events and realities of creation, and everything is a direct expression of these natural laws. To the degree that Jesus taught that not even a sparrow can fall to the earth apart from the will of God as expressed in the laws. And the reality of the natural laws includes the development and evolution of the soul as encountered and expressed in the laws of this realm, which can be portrayed as a living biofeedback organism that develops the soul by returning back that person's words, thoughts, desires, and deeds. See living biofeedback organism. Holographically, what this also means is that the pattern of the whole is replicated into each of the seven colors that comprise white light, or the notes of the octave scale. And because in the Alpha of creation there was no experiential knowledge, and all that existed, existed in an undeveloped and unknowing state, on one level the seven that made up the whole became separated and disconnected from each other. And when rightly understood, this separation within itself is allegorically portrayed as the fall of man. See the folly of original sin and the allegorical fall of man. Paradoxically and holographically, on one level, each of the seven became whole within themselves, and therefore functioned independently of the other six, while paradoxically, on another level, they remained on a deeper level connected. And it is this inability of organic man to comprehend paradoxical truths, where two seemingly opposing truths are equally true within the reality of a hologram, that totally inhibits his ability to comprehend not only his own higher soul realty, but anything beyond the very limited perception of what he sees with his physical eyes. And this inability to perceive and comprehend in wholeness is personified in the Gospel of Thomas saying, Jesus said, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you." Mankind is portrayed as the prodigal son who has become lost in this, the far country, see parable of the prodigal son. And man's inability to perceive and understand with wholeness is portrayed in the Gospels as the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness. But what is the outer darkness? When rightly understood, what Jesus portrays as the outer darkness parallels the analogy of Plato's cave of shadow images and illusions, see Plato's cave. And if we pose the questions as to what causes mankind to perceive what can be portrayed as allegorical shadow images, it is a reality that mystics have long known, which modern physicists have only now proven to be true, as demonstrated in the statement of physicist Walter Thuring in his book, Erbostein der Materie, where he wrote about the true nature of matter, that modern physics has put our thinking about the essence of matter in a different context. It has taken our gaze from the visible, the particles, to the underlying entity, the field. The presence of matter is merely a disturbance of the perfect state of the field at that place, something accidental, one could almost say, a blemish. Accordingly, there are no simple laws describing the forces between elementary particles. Order and symmetry must be sought in the underlying field. Einstein experienced shock when he first came into contact with the new reality of atomic physics, and wrote in his autobiography, "All my attempts to adapt the theoretical foundation of physics to this new type of knowledge failed completely. It was as if the ground had been pulled out from under one, with no firm foundation to be seen anywhere upon which one could have built." In much the same fashion, the European physicist Niels Bohr stated that the great extension of our experience in recent years has brought to light the insufficiency of our simple mechanical conceptions and, as a consequence, has shaken the foundation on which the customary interpretation of observation was based. The vast difference between what would be called the common knowledge of man and the higher spiritual reality attested to by the mystic and visionary of man's distant past has begun to be demonstrated by the modern scientific community. What the physicist portrays as a blemish, where the intersecting forces of the field manifest what we call matter, which images the analogy of Plato's cave, portrays as shadow image of a higher unseen reality that man's organic senses are unable to perceive, as the result of the fact that this world is a three-dimensional realm, allegorically expressing a higher 12-dimensional non-physical reality. See the truth. If God is light, and our souls, which were created in the image and likeness of God, are light beings who are individual sparks of the divine mind, and light is comprised of the seven primary colors of the rainbow as expressed when white light is projected through a prism, and the seven colors of the rainbow also correspond to the seven notes of an octave, see law of octaves. And while on one paradoxical level the light exists because the seven segments that make it up remain in balanced harmony, while on another paradoxical level they remain divided and independent of each of the other segments, then what we have is one of the primary blueprints of both the whole, the individual souls, as well as ourselves as mankind. But to begin to understand this higher reality, we must come to comprehend that when the allegorical account in Genesis states that God created mankind in his own image, in the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. And what is called the divine pattern of creation, which is mother/father God, and the third force balance, which is portrayed as the Logos or Son of God, is replicated into every aspect of creation that is positive/negative and balance. As sparks of the divine mind, our souls retain their reality as beings of light, because as Adam was initially portrayed as Adam/Eve prior to the separation of male and female, so too is our soul the balance of male and female that is, as stated in the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, which quotes the Zohar, "The soul itself has no sex, which is determined by the body and may vary from incarnation to incarnation. And our soul or true self remains a being of light, because at that level of creation the division of male and female does not exist, and the seven primary colors and notes remain as one. But in the same way that the light of Creator God is comprised of the seven primary colors, so too is each spark of the divine mind that forms our individual souls. Why were the individual souls created and came into being? In the Alpha of creation, ignorance prevailed because experiential knowledge did not exist. And without knowledge based upon actual experience, true knowledge and knowing cannot exist. So, the individual souls came into existence so that creation could emerge out of the alpha of ignorance and unknowing and begin to possess actual knowledge and knowing based upon experience. And as the individual souls began to interact, experiential knowledge came into existence, and from the perspective of the divine mind that was expressing self through the experiences of the individual souls, actual knowledge came into existence. And through this body of experiential knowledge, creation itself began to move toward the omega of enlightened light and knowing. As a point of reference, I often portray each soul as a single neuron in the mind of God, logos. And in the same way that holographically, our own mind is comprised of a great number of neurons or points of influence and control over our thinking, actions, and body functions, so too is the logos or divine mind of God. Both man and an amoeba can be portrayed as being individualized in one, and the differences are so vast that the two cannot even be compared with each other. Higher perception, knowledge, and comprehension requires a complexity of understanding, while both man and an amoeba can be portrayed as one, because of the complexity of mind and body that makes up man, no comparison can be made with respect to intelligence, intellect, and reasoning. In the same way that the organs and systems of man's body are segmented in order to create a harmonic segregated environment for the mind to function at a higher level, with the amoeba being the opposite of man, it is important to understand that the very complex human body and mind were all drawn from the one primary cell, and that within the one exists the genetic structure that manifested the complex organism known as man. Thus, in the same way that the very complex mind of man is comprised of the great number of neurons that make up the networked perceptive intellect that perceives from many perspectives, holographically, the mind of man is an image of the soul mind, which soul mind, as a single neuron in the mind of God, is an image of the mind or logos of Creator God. And what is holographically true of the divine pattern of the mind of God is also replicated into each soul, as the pattern is also replicated into the mind of man, which of course provokes the question, where, then, is the individual neurons that comprise the soul mind? When Jesus portrayed this realm as the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness, the reason man can't perceive and understand the higher complex reality of both soul and creation is because this is a dualistic three-dimensional realm as explored throughout the foregoing linked article. And it is for this same reason that in the analogy of Plato's cave, this realm is portrayed as shadow images, which is also why modern physics has portrayed what we perceive as concrete matter as a blemish created by the intersecting forces within the etheric field that is the source of the image we perceive with our physical eyes and senses, which is why Paul instructed, "While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." 2 Cor 4:18 KJV. And why the Gospel of Thomas declares, "Jesus said, recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you," which is why one of the primary objectives of the original gospel teachings was to open the eyes of the heart, see eyes of the heart, which would enable the person to gaze at the source that lies beyond the facade of the blemish or shadow image of the outer darkness. The individual soul cannot possess the perceptive vision or knowledge of the logos or mind of God, because the knowledge of the soul is limited to the individual experiences of that soul, whereas, as creation moves out of the Alpha towards the Omega, the experiential knowledge of God, who is experiencing through all of the souls or neurons in the logos of mind of God, has become virtually infinite. Which provokes the question, if the pattern of the whole is replicated into each soul, then where are the individual neurons that comprise the mind of the soul? In the same way that on a soul level, the paradoxical opposite polarities of male and female are one, unlike mankind who dwells in a three-dimensional shadow realm, the soul or true self of man dwells in a 12-dimensional realm of mind and being that I often portray as the realm of souls, and as demonstrated in the previous subheadings, see the enigma of time and the soul of man. What we call time is merely a dimension of soul mind that can be moved in. Thus, because the mind of the soul exists across the spectrum of time, so too does all the soul personalities generated by the soul continue to exist within the soul-mind matrix, as presented in the Gospel of Thomas saying 84 with respect to the relationship of what is portrayed as your likeness, and the images which came into existence before you, that is, your true self or soul self is portrayed in the words, "Jesus said, when you see your likeness, you rejoice." Contrary to Eastern dogma and the concept of reincarnation, the soul or soul self does not enter into this world, but rather, What enters into the body vessel at conception is an embryonic image of the higher soul self that is. But when you see your images which came into being before you, and which neither die nor become manifest, how much you will have to bear. And these images which failed to become manifest do not reincarnate, neither do they go to glory as the Christians believe, but rather, as images that failed to attain the next level of birth, they remain within the matrix of the soul. See Soul Symphony, Time, Soul Octaves, Spiritual Cathedral, wherein I often portray the previously generated images as single neurons in the soul-mind matrix. What this means is that each soul personality generated into this realm that lived lives in different time frames, as different genders, as different races drawn from different religions and often totally different experiences of life, is eventually evolved to the level where that personality can be reunited to their source in the higher reality of their soul, and that all these personalities that lived individual lives during different time frames throughout man's history all continue to consciously dwell within the soul-mind matrix. And the fact that what we call time is a dimension of mind that the soul can move in means that the whole perception of time and the soul must be radically revised as the person is going to evolve beyond the animal soul level of consciousness that Paul warns is incapable of comprehending the true meaning of the original gospel teachings and the mysteries of creation. The consciousness of what Paul calls natural man or organic man is portrayed as being of an animal soul level of mind and being. See organic man ruled over by his lower animal nature. The physical body of man has been formed out of the lower three kingdoms of this world, that is, mineral, vegetable, and animal, and having emerged out of the initial womb of his physical mother, he has entered the secondary womb of Mother Earth holographically, as a cosmic sperm or ovum. Which is why in the Gospel of the Nazarenes, which preserves many of the important teachings which were removed from the canonical Gospels by the Church, organic natural man is portrayed as a beast who walks in the form of man. Love you one another and all the creatures of God. Yet I say to you, not all are men who are in the form of man. Are they men or women in the image of God whose ways of violence, of oppression and wrong, who choose a lie rather than the truth? No, truly, till they are born again and receive the spirit of love and wisdom within their hearts. Then only are they sons and daughters of Israel. And being of Israel, they are children of God. See organic man. And in the same way that the first stage of birth provided you a physical body which was made up of the lower three earthly kingdoms, when you emerged out of your physical mother's womb, you entered the secondary womb of Mother Earth in order to bring about the next stage of birth as that of man in the fourth kingdom, that is. Yet I say to you, not all are men who are in the form of man.